Hello and welcome back to the Barely Professional podcast. On today's episode, I'll be talking to Tiffany Dawson, a STEM career coach for women. She gives her advice on how to stand out in a male-dominated industry, as well as tips and tricks for improving your confidence. Hope you enjoy the episode. And kind of how you ended up doing what you do now.
Sure. Well, my name is Tiffany Dawson. I am a career coach for women in STEM. And I got to where I am today by being a woman in STEM myself. So I used to be a mechanical engineer in the construction industry. I designed all sorts of different buildings in terms of their heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. And obviously, construction is a very male-dominated industry. So I went through a lot of the common challenges that women in male-dominated industries face over these past 8 years. And I guess when I was given the chance to get the support I needed, I realized, wow, I mean, there is definitely a way to overcome these challenges. Why hadn't anyone ever taught me how to do this before? And how many other women out there are also in the same position? There are so many women who will leave their workplaces, especially in engineering, around mid to senior levels because they don't get this support. So once I realized that there is knowledge and there are tools out there to help these women, I really wanted to shout it from the rooftops and share it with as many women as possible. And I became so passionate about it that I decided that that is what I was going to do full time. So here I am today. I coach women full time, whether that's on a one-on-one basis or via group workshops, which I do for universities and workplaces. And yeah, I also run my own podcast so that anyone can have access to this career advice as well, which I'm sure we'll get onto in a bit.
So if we backtrack a bit, what made you choose engineering in the first place?
Sure. I think that it's a little bit embarrassing, but the reason I chose engineering was because I didn't want to do any of the other stuff. It was a bit of a, I think I was just a little bit lost when I was a teenager and didn't really have too much direction. Maybe that's not so uncommon, to be fair. So I grew up in Australia. Our schooling system is a little bit different. So we have until we're 18 to kind of choose what we're going to do in university. I believe in the UK, you kind of have to have an idea by the time you're 16 or so, right?
Yeah, kind of going into sixth form, you tend to choose your subjects. And if you do A-levels especially, it's quite a narrow selection because you only choose four. So, yeah, you kind of do have to make that decision quite early on.
Yeah, so that blows my mind because even at the age of 18, I had no idea what I wanted to do. And I was very fortunate to go to an amazing school. It was a private school, so the expectations were high. So most girls at my school would either go and study law or medicine, and then maybe engineering. There were only two girls in my whole year level, including myself, who ended up being engineers. But I kind of looked at all the other normal career paths that students in my school went through, and I was like, I'm just not interested in that stuff. So I am glad that I ended up in engineering. And in my course, you choose engineering, and then in the first year, you dabble in all the different types of engineering. So I got to do a little bit of civil and structural engineering, some chemical engineering and systems and all that kind of stuff. And I just thought mechanical was the most interesting at the time for me because there's lots of moving parts. So I ended up there. So I think in answer to your question, the reason I ended up in mechanical engineering was via a series of, you know, elimination. But I'm really glad I ended up there.
Was it what you expected it to be? So when you obviously, when you went to university, you chose mechanical engineering, but then when you actually started to work in the industry, was it what you imagined it to be?
That's another interesting one. I feel like the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, wow, I really had no idea what I was doing back then, did I? But I didn't really know what to expect, if I'm honest. I went to a university that was really focused on research and PhDs and all of that kind of stuff. And even the lecturers were, you know, none of them had industry experience. So we had very little contact with the outside world, with the industry world. So I didn't really know what to expect. I ended up going into a role that was quite corporate. So, you know, based on just knowing what a corporate lifestyle is like, I kind of understood that. In terms of the opportunities, though, I don't think it was quite what I expected. I got to working on buildings, you get to go to lots of places in buildings that other people don't get to go to. And, you know, I got to go to lots of rooftops and saw lots of views of different cities, which was really cool. So there were definitely some surprises there.
Was it all good, or were there things that you would have maybe made you choose something else had you known it before?
Yeah, there were a lot of good things. I went into a workplace that had a really awesome culture for, yeah, graduate engineers. And there was a whole program for the graduates in terms of, you know, developing them and making sure that they're on the right track really quickly. And we got to, yeah, get together with all the graduates from around the country. So in each state of Australia, we all flew to the one area and got to meet each other for a week-long thing. So that was really, really cool. Got to meet lots of people. In terms of things that I didn't expect, one of my first mentors, she was my manager at the time. She was very, very strong on making sure that a woman never gets beaten down in her place in an engineering company. And one of the things that really stood out to me was she told me, you know, when you go to a meeting and there's a jug of water and some glasses there, never be the person to pour the water. And I was like, oh, that's so odd. Like, I would never even think of that being an issue. But her point of view was that she didn't want to be seen as the helper. She wanted to really stamp her authority of being the engineer. And maybe she had gone through some experiences in the past where people thought she was something else.
Yeah.
I've thought a lot about her piece of advice since that time, since those many years ago. I am happy to be the person to pour water for people. I just think that that's something I would do out of kindness, whether it is a person who is more senior than me or more junior than me. I just think being kind is something that I value. So I will be kind no matter what the situation. And I think there are other ways to show that you're an engineer, not the person who pours drinks for people at a meeting.
So obviously you've worked with a lot of women both during your career and now as career coach. So are there things that you've noticed, like the not pouring the water, that people have in order to kind of show authority or to make them feel like they are standing out in a room full of men?
Yeah, this is such an interesting topic that you raise. There are definitely things, and certainly things that I realized in myself after learning about this topic a bit more. So one of the things is I noticed at periods of my career that I would dress less femininely, and I didn't realize it at the time, but I think what I was doing was that I wanted people to take me more seriously. So I ended up wearing clothes of the, you know, very boring clothes, very muted dark colors and, you know, shirts and stuff, because I wanted to be taken seriously. And that is me trying to emulate the leaders that I had who everyone else took seriously, and they were all men. So I would wear, you know, something kind of a little bit more similar to what they would wear, just because I didn't have those strong female role models to look up to who wore whatever the hell they wanted to wear. So it's kind of a shame that, you know, there are women out there who might not feel like they can fully express themselves, whether that's through clothes or the way they act or things they talk about at work, because they want to be seen as taken more seriously, and they do that by emulating their male leaders. Yeah. So that's definitely one thing that I noticed in myself. There is another term. I don't know if you've heard of the term Queen Bee Syndrome before.
No, I haven't.
So generally, you know, women like you and I, and probably most of the listeners to this podcast, we're all very supportive of other women in STEM. And that's why we get involved in communities like this, because we want to uplift other women. There's another type of woman in the workplace, which I hope not too many people have to bump into. Generally, these are women who are more senior, and they don't support other women. So they will actively not support more junior women in their workplaces. They don't do this on purpose, and I don't think that they know they do it. But I think what happens with these women is that they have had to fight so hard to get up to the positions that they're in, that they get to the top and they think, okay, I need to protect my position. I really need to defend myself. And therefore, if there are any other women who might threaten my position, I won't help them. So I think it's all kind of not really obvious to them that they're doing, but that also does sometimes happen, unfortunately.
Do you have advice for people, for maybe recent graduates, people just going into the workplace that come across women like that?
So I did definitely have a queen bee in my team the first job that I started. So when I was a graduate, she just felt a little bit threatened that there was another female in the team. I don't know why, because she was brilliant at what she did and she was so much more senior, but she definitely had something against me for no reason, because I had just started and I did get along with literally everyone else at the company, so I'm pretty sure it wasn't something that I was doing. I think the thing I learned from that experience was, if you notice someone like that, just try not to take it too personally if they do anything against you. Obviously, if there's something really terrible that they're doing that you need to report, speak to someone about it. Even if it's just someone, another graduate who might be able to help you approach someone more senior, if that's what you want. So definitely speak to someone if you're going through those challenges. But from the day-to-day stuff, try not to take it too seriously. Chances are, if they're acting strange around you, other people around you will know that they're in the wrong anyway. So you don't really need to highlight the fact that they're being mean to you or whatever. It's going to be pretty obvious.
So moving on to what you do now. So obviously you work with women to help them further their careers and kind of give them some guidance on where to go. So what are the most common concerns that women come to you with?
The number one most common concern is lack of confidence in the workplace. I think this is to do with several things. First and foremost is just the way that society has taught women to behave in the world. You'll see lots of research done on even children at school, like very early school age, that they are not as confident as the boys in their school already at such a young age. And society has just taught women to be quieter, be a good girl, and then you'll be rewarded. And that works while you're at school and sometimes even at university, because you are behaving in a way that pleases whoever's marking your projects or whatever, and therefore you'll get rewarded with good grades. then suddenly as soon as you get to the workplace, it switches. You need to start thinking innovatively. You need to start taking risks. You need to start doing stuff that might make you feel uncomfortable in order to succeed in the workplace. And I think that's a switch that many women don't realize they need to make. And fair enough, because no one ever teaches us, yeah, right? and then that level of, you know, having to make decisions and take risks increases the more senior you become. Therefore, if you think that, okay, once I get to the next level, you know, once I become a senior engineer, I'll be more confident, that totally doesn't work, because confidence comes from the inside. It doesn't come from being given a promotion. It doesn't come from being given lots of good feedback. It really comes from within. So that's the main piece of work that definitely goes through any type of coaching I do with women. It has to do with some level of confidence building. The second most common thing is to do with work-life balance. I don't really like the term work-life balance, because work is part of your life. It's not really just one or the other. And also, balance makes it seem like, you know, you're always teetering on the edge of something, when in fact you can be happy for like your whole entire life, you know, at home, with your family, with your friends, with work. You should be happy in all parts of your life, because, you know, if something happens at work and you've got a good network outside of work, you're probably going to be more likely to handle that situation better, and vice versa. You know, if something's going on at home and you're really confident at work, you're really happy in your work, then the scales are probably okay. But if everything's kind of slowly dwindling, then that's a problem. Like, that's a lot of stress for one person to take. So in terms of helping women improve their work-life balance, it's more about empowering them to understand they have control over what they do achieve at work and at home. They can draw boundaries of whether they want to work overtime or not, and there is total control there. Lots of times we will fall into the trap of becoming a victim of our circumstances, especially at the workplace. You know, you might feel like lots of other people in your team are working really long hours, for example, and you might feel the pressure to do the same. If you don't want to do that, you don't have to. So it's about really being confident in yourself that you can draw those boundaries and just sticking to them and being happy that that's what you want.
Yeah, absolutely. So confidence is obviously really key. What kind of things would you suggest people work on? Because I know when I first started, especially at uni, I went from an all-girls school to obviously a very male-dominated degree. And a lot of the time I found that people seemed almost surprised that I knew what I was talking about. And I constantly felt like I was almost defending my own intelligence rather than just being able to say what I thought and make a mistake, quite honestly, because you almost felt like you had to be so on it all the time because there were so many people thinking that maybe you couldn't do the same thing they could, despite you being on the same degree. So do you have any advice maybe for students going in to uni or being put in that situation?
Yeah, oh my goodness. As you were talking there, I was like, oh my goodness, I totally remember that. I'd tell people, yeah, I'm studying engineering, and they'd be like, oh, that's so clever for a girl. I'm like, what? What do you mean? So frustrating, right? And it's only because you're a girl they think you're clever for doing the engineering, but then it sounds like they're complimenting you, and so it just gets really murky. And those are all things that, you know, these little, you know, micro events that happen throughout a female engineer's life, is sometimes if you're not aware of it and you're not aware how to increase your own confidence, these little events will start to tear away at you. So definitely having these conversations with women early on in their careers and at university stage is really important. So I'm really glad that I'm here. In terms of building up your own confidence, I think the number one thing I get my clients to do, so my coaching clients to do, is to start building what I call an evidence journal. So this is where you write down anything you do inside of school or out, or inside of work or out, anything that you do that you're proud of, or, you know, if you get a good piece of feedback, or, you know, something that, an achievement that you've made, you just start writing them down in a journal, or, you know, like a note on your phone, somewhere that's really accessible. After a while, you'll have built up this massive bank of amazing stuff that you've done over time, because it's so easy to forget them, right? You get a good grade one week, the next week you're like, oh, I'm so terrible at this subject. You just forget. So having that list there for times when your confidence is starting to dip, you read that list, just pick a few things, have a read, and you're like, that's right, I am actually really good at this. There's all this evidence here. There's no way I'm just lucky that I've achieved all of these things. That would be absolutely impossible. I have this evidence that here that I am actually good at these things. So I think that's a really good tool I would encourage anyone to do, and it's something you should continue to add to as you go on in your life.
No, I think it is so important to kind of have good role models as well. Did you find that when you were starting out in your engineering career, you didn't really have anyone to look up to?
Yeah, I had very few women to look up to, and that's not to say you can't have men as role models as well. It's just that there's something really nice about finding a role model you can relate to, and a role model who you can see your future being like, if that makes sense. So when I was very early on in my career, I had this amazing female role model in my team. So I was in Australia and she was Irish actually, and I just really related to her on a personal level. She had the same type of humor I did. She seemed to be amazing at what she did, but was also really humble. So wasn't really the type who would go around showing off or anything. So I felt like that could be someone I could be. So I was really lucky to have her in my career for the first year, but then we had to part ways after that. So she's probably the most, up until this day, my most relatable work role model. I have had other role models who have been males who I have related to in the past as well. So one of my managers, he was really, yeah, I guess he was really ambitious in terms of what he wanted to achieve in his job, but he was also really down to earth, and he was very, he put a lot of importance on his family time and time outside of work. And although he worked hard, he was really good at drawing those boundaries. So again, I felt like that was someone I be as well.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think I found that doing this podcast has allowed me to talk to so many people, and it's made me gain so much confidence knowing that there are other people that have gone through similar things, and hearing about their experiences, I think it's helped so much kind of put it in perspective, sort of know you're not the only one.
Yeah.
You're thinking, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing, or you know, I don't know how to deal with this situation. So that's like, I think it's really helped to have people out there that you can look up to.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we seek role models who seem really perfect. I mean, firstly, no one is perfect. And as you said, as you speak to these amazing people, you find out that they also had challenges that they had to overcome. And it's really cool that you're uncovering those stories for people, so that we realize we might be putting these people up on a pedestal, but actually they went through the same challenges as us. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, I love finding role models who they don't think they're role models because they're really open about their challenges. So even from day one, you know about what hardships they've had to face. I think it's really nice to find those role models who you can learn off and gain confidence through as well.
Definitely. When you do your coaching, what kind of things do you tell women to do? Obviously, you talk to them about gaining confidence, but are there any skills when they go to two interviews in order to portray themselves well? Are there things that you tell them?
Definitely. So in terms of job seeking, which is another, I guess, arm of what I do, I did recently coach a woman who she'd gone through quite a few job interviews. I think it was 20 job interviews over the last 12 months, and she didn't get any of those jobs. So she must have been doing something well in her written applications because she was getting these interviews. But when it came to the interview itself, she for some reason wasn't getting anything. And I think it can be really hard to get feedback from people who have interviewed you, but she tried really, really hard to get some feedback, and she shared that with me. After talking with her for a little while, we uncovered that the problem was, like, it wasn't anything to do with lack of experience or lack of knowledge or anything. It was because she felt really uncomfortable talking about her own achievements. So she was afraid of being seen as being boastful or talking about herself too highly. And obviously when you're at an interview, that doesn't really help. Being humble doesn't really help you because you're trying to showcase the best of yourself. So we worked a little bit on her mindset of self-promotion. The opposite of self-promotion is what I call princess syndrome. So that's where you kind of sit around waiting for someone to notice the great work that you've been doing. That doesn't work in the workplace. You have to be out there telling people what you've achieved. And you can definitely do it in a way that isn't boastful. So that's one of the skills that I coach on. Specifically to do with interviews, it's important to talk about your, the impact that you've had based on things that you've done. So in an interview, people ask you, can you give me an example of when, I don't know, you showed leadership? So most people will just say something like, oh yeah, I led this team project on this subject. That's not really enough. You need to start talking about the benefit you brought as well. So instead of just saying what you did, also mention what benefit did you bring to your team or what impact did you have? And even better, if you can add some numbers in there. So, you know, I increased the members in our WES chapter from 80 to 100 people. Like when you can put numbers in there, that really helps as well.
So actually quantifying what you've done in some way.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
And do you find that obviously because of COVID, a lot more things are done virtually. Is it harder for people to communicate their achievements over a virtual interview?
Potentially. I think it is quite artificial still for us to talk on screen. There is just something about being physically in a room with someone else that you just can't get on screen. I can't put my finger on it, whether it's a slight delay or maybe there are, I don't know, it's just the vibe.
It's harder, yeah.
You just can't get the vibe, right? It is tricky. And I've heard that there are some graduate schemes at the moment who are doing their interviews in a really horrendous way, I feel. I think they flash a question up on screen and then it just records you answering it and you don't have time to think. Is that your experience?
I've done one of those. It's very off-putting because there's no one's reaction for you to gauge. You just get a question and 30 seconds to read it and then you have to talk for 2 minutes. And there's no one on the other side. So these are all pre-recorded and then they look at them afterwards. And I really enjoy interviews. That's something my application might be horrendous, but if you can talk to me in an interview, somehow I will convince you. But having no one on the other side made it so difficult to kind of, normally you see something in someone's face and you think, okay, I can work with that. They're interested.
Yes.
carry on with it. There's nothing. So you have no idea whether you're doing well or you're answering what they wanted you to answer, or you're going completely off topic and saying something horrendous. You just don't know.
Yeah, that sounds so tough, and I've never had to do anything like that before. But I guess one thing to remember is that everyone else is in the same boat. And if you're listening to this podcast, it probably means you care a whole lot about your career, and you're probably doing a lot better than lots of other people anyway. But one thing that is, I guess, a benefit to that type of interview is that you can practice that really easily. You don't have to really practice with someone else who might throw in a curveball answer or like question halfway through your answer. So yeah, really just preparing, practicing, writing a whole bunch of questions that you think might be asked and answering them, answering them in front of a mirror is really helpful. It feels silly, but especially if you're doing it on screen and you're seeing your own face back, that can really help as well. Just the practice of saying it out loud at least once before you have to do it in a test situation is really helpful.
No, I agree. I do sometimes record, so I just set up my phone on the side and I'll speak to it, and you can watch it back and see how you're responding to the situation a lot better, I find.
Yeah, that's great.
You do it in a mirror, you forget while you're talking, obviously not concentrating on what you're actually doing. So when you watch it back, you can really see the little things that you're doing.
That's such a great tip. I love that.
And just to finish, do you have any last piece of advice for future engineers or people that are maybe considering a career in engineering and they're not too sure?
So much advice. I think the biggest thing is to, whether you're choosing engineering or you're going into a new engineering role, follow what inspires you. So if you're given a work opportunity that you think, this could be something that inspires me day to day, then go for it. If you're in a job and you get presented with something that you're really against doing, and sometimes you have to do stuff that you don't like doing to get you closer to what you want to do in the end. But if you're doing something that you don't enjoy doing and it's not getting you closer to any of your goals, you can always say no, because only you will look out for your own career. Other people might help, but you have to remember that other people might have their own agendas for what you're doing or for what they're doing as well. So really learn to trust your inner voice when it comes to choosing your career path and little steps along the way. And if you're not sure, because sometimes when you're in that situation, it can be really difficult to decipher when you're in the thick of it what the right thing is to do. If you're not sure, speak to someone about it. I'm always here to help. I'm a career coach, so I help people make these decisions every day. So just, shoot me a LinkedIn message and I'd be happy to help how I can, or speak to a friend or a colleague and just try and make decisions that'll mean you're inspired every day at work.
Been one of my favorite episodes to record so far. I found Tiffany so inspirational, and I hope you learned as much as I did. Stay tuned for the next episode, and as always, feel free to share the episode.